Hello, I'm Darren Grimes, Digital Manager at the IEA. This morning, I read in the free weekly magazine for women, Stylist Magazine, of the sheer frustration evidenced by working women. Stylist says women ask for the legislation, women talk to their employers, women do everything they can, and despite it all, the gender pay gap is getting bigger. In today's podcast, I'm joined by Kate Andrews, Associate Director at the IEA. Kate, in a new IEA report, argues that gender pay gap reporting produces yet another round of misleading and inaccurate statistics. The gender pay gap is not the same, you see, as unequal pay. Unequal pay is giving women less than men for the same work. That has been against the law since the Equal Pay Act was introduced in 1970. A company's gender pay gap can also be caused by other things. For example, fewer women in senior or highly paid roles, or more women in part-time jobs. Kate argues that the harvested data from the reporting measures illustrates how crude figures create a misleading picture, especially for companies that have hired large numbers of female staff into lower paid roles. She also says the reporting measures contribute to the narrative that women are paid less than men, despite this statement remaining categorically untrue for many women in their respective organisation. Thank you for joining me today, Kate.
Hi, Darren.
Now, Kate, I want to start by asking how you can counter the claims in Stylist magazine, given that initial figures for this year's round of reporting showed that the pay gap had increased at hundreds of big firms in the UK. A BBC analysis of the first 10% of companies who'd submitted their figures found 40% showed pay gaps that were widening.
The gender pay gap can widen for a whole number of reasons, but let's look at two examples why it could widen. One could be because there's genuine discrimination going on in the workplace. Employers look at women, they think that they're second-rate, second-class workers. They choose not to promote them. They choose not to give them pay raises. That could be a reason that your gender pay gap widens. Let's look at another reason. You could be looking at recruiting 50 new people into your growing company, probably into junior level roles for this hypothetical company we're coming up with. And so you're looking at recent graduates to hire. Given the fact that more women are going to university, graduating from university, and actually becoming extremely well educated, it could be the case that you desire to hire 30, 40, 49 of the 50 as women. It could be that you bring in a huge influx of young women into your organization and pay them at a starting rate. Both of these things could lead to a highly increased gender pay gap. The point I'd make is that given the pay gap reporting measures can't tell us under which context gender pay gaps are widening or decreasing, they really can't tell us very much at all.
So when we talk about all these statistics and figures, what are we actually discussing then? You know, is this an issue of equal pay, the gender pay gap, both or neither, as far as you're concerned?
It's definitely not an issue of equal pay for equal work. The pay gap reporting measures that look at hourly wages, they look at the mean calculation, the median, they look at bonus calculations, they look at how many men and women are in lower, middle, and upper pay quartiles. None of this can tell us anything about equal pay for equal work, which, as you said in your introduction, has been illegal for decades now. Unfortunately, there are still instances where this happens, but it is completely against the law and should be treated as such. What we're talking about is the gender pay gap. Now, there are an infinite number of gender pay gaps. You can calculate this to come up with almost any statistic you want to. The way you come up with different statistics is by including or not including certain aspects. You could include comparing jobs like for like, you could include age, background, experience, education, and degree level. These pay gap reporting measures do none of that. They don't even bother to separate full-time and part-time workers from each other. So we're talking about a gender pay gap, but we're talking about really useless figures around the gender pay gap because they haven't taken anything meaningful into account. So these pay gap figures are comparing the CEO of a FTSE 100 company to the junior researcher who was hired yesterday.
But I mean, we saw with things like the Equal Pay Act, no one would argue against the Equal Pay Act as, you know, a key piece of
legislation. I certainly wouldn't.
And do you think that that government needs to step in then and ensure that there are more women in the top jobs by quotas, for example?
Quotas are a terrible idea for many reasons, but the one that really sticks out to me is how you as a woman would feel if you were given your job to tick a box. Quotas undermine women because it is suggesting, actually it's basically stating, that women cannot break into top positions without the system being rigged in some way to help them. It's suggesting that you can't be on a board, you can't be CEO, you can't get that job unless you're helped. You couldn't actually compete with a man to get it. Someone has to help you there. And we know this not to be the case. Women are just as amazing and hardworking and successful as men. So the moment that you bring in quotas, even if you are promoting a woman based on her merit, how could she ever really know? And critically, how could her colleagues know? There's always going to be that level of resentment that she didn't get the top job because she absolutely deserved it, but because it was required by law to tick a box.
I mean, another you mentioned one of the many reasons of the pay gap is the fact that women have children. Women's priorities change. Do you think we need to focus more on shared parental leave? Because the figures for that since the legislation came in are really quite low. Figures from last year, for example, showed that the take-up may be as low as 2%. And couldn't that explain the alarming nature of some of these gender pay gap statistics?
It definitely does. I'm a big fan of shared parental leave. The job of the state should be to make it as easy as possible for consenting adults to do what they'd like freely in the world, as long as they're not harming anybody else. And shared parental leave means that two adults who share a child can choose between themselves who's going to take time off when and how. But the pickup, as you note, has been absolutely abysmal. And one of the issues that we do have is that paternity pay is woefully low compared to maternity pay. If women take time off, they're much better compensated from the role that they're stepping away from temporarily than men are. You either have to have a very generous company who's willing to fork out for paternity pay, or you have to be quite wealthy. And this makes it difficult for a lot of men to take up shared parental leave and for families to really have a choice. So that's an area of public policy that does need to be looked at. I very rarely call for more state funding, but I'd like to see funds diverted from other areas, probably to go into the paternity pot, because then men and women could really have a choice as to who's going to take that time off. It is important, though, to realize that what women are telling us by the way that they choose to live their lives freely is that many women value taking time off to raise children. We should not demonize this. We should not treat mothers as if they're making some terrible choice. I think often we see that women have a much healthier outlook on a work-life balance. For me, as an individualist, it's all about enabling people to do what they want. I would never want an employer to assume that all women want to take time off to have children. That's not true. Some women want to stay on the exact same career trajectory as their male counterparts. Some men are really keen to take time off and raise kids. It's different for everyone, but we can't ignore what many women are telling us through their actions, which is that they do value time at home. So it's about creating a structure and a system that allows men and women to make these choices, but then we shouldn't try to meddle. We should allow people to make those choices freely and to raise their children in the way they see fit.
Do you think women need to be a bit less squeamish about talking about money? Because is it down to a sort of, well, advocating that women be a bit more ambitious, you know, not fearing asking for a promotion? For example, Mintel says that 41% of women feel confident about challenging a senior employee, compared with 62% of men.
So the evidence is really mixed on this. And actually, while I have seen some studies that suggest that women are more nervous in the workplace to ask for what they deserve or what they think they should be compensated for, a lot of studies have gone about debunking this as well. I don't think the issue is that women aren't willing to ask for a pay raise or that they're too shy. I think there's a lot of evidence that men and women value different things in the workplace. So there are studies that show that, you know, women really prefer a nicer working environment, one where their colleagues are friendlier, one where they don't have to be in the office 24/7 and when they have their weekends. Again, this isn't all women, but, you know, there are some studies that show this. And I think it's, again, important to recognize that individuals will make different choices based on their values. I mean, I constantly say that I am contributing to the gender pay gap. I'm choosing to work in a nonprofit educational charity as opposed to the private sector or business or finance. I mean, not that any of them would hire me. But, you know, if I dared put myself forward for those jobs and something worked out, I could earn a lot more money. So I, by my life choice of working for a charity, I am contributing to the gender pay gap. But of course, nobody could reasonably think about it in this way. I'm a person in the world, you know, doing what I want to do, living my life the way I see fit. But, you know, that does contribute to the ONS's statistics on the gender pay gap. So we need to recognize the context of that. It's not that I'm being discriminated against or that anyone's trying to hold me down. It's not that I can't break that glass ceiling. It's that this is my choice.
Now, the Fawcett Society argue that a way in which we can receive more meaningful data is to actually increase the scope of the pay gap statistics. Now, the minimum size of companies legally obliged to take part in pay gap reporting, they argue, should be reduced from 250 workers to 50. The Women's Equality Party thinks it should be 20, which is the number used in Scotland. What do you think about that?
Thankfully, the government has so far rejected requiring smaller and medium-sized companies to report their gender pay gap data. The first thing I'd say is if the data we're getting from large companies is so badly skewed and so meaningless, we wouldn't want to extend that to anybody, regardless of their size. But of course, the smaller you go, the more meaningless your data is, because smaller groups are, the comparisons you make between smaller groups can't tell you as much. I mean, we could sit here and calculate the gender pay gap between you and me. We could sit here and calculate the gender pay gap within the IEA's research team, but we're talking about a handful of people. It doesn't tell us anything when you're dealing with numbers of that size. So you're just going to input significantly more meaningless and inaccurate data into the public, which is already overwhelmed by these absolutely outrageous and bombastic headlines about companies having 40, 50, 60% gender pay gaps with absolutely no context. I've felt for years now that there is an attempt on the part of some of these feminist groups to press the reset button when it comes to the gender pay gap. The official statistics have the pay gap at the lowest it's ever been before, about 8.6% for full-time workers and negative 4.4% for part-time workers. That is a pay gap in favor of women. And, you know, there was a time a few decades ago where women were discriminated against and the pay gap was significantly higher because of that. But now when you break down that pay gap, you can, and that's even before getting to jobs and comparisons that are really like for like. We're at the lowest we've ever been historically. And, you know, I would hope that feminist groups would be praising this and shouting it from the rooftops. The reality is that they're morphing into a victimhood industry and they need these outrageous statistics to keep finding people to come their way to keep going, because goodness forbid, women have been successful, they've made it, and they don't need crutches anymore. And so there's a real attempt to reset the gender pay gap. Groups can now claim that we have 50, 60, 70% gender pay gaps again, and they can go back to acting like we're living in a genuinely discriminatory time. And the reality is it's the opposite of that. It's the best it's ever been for women in 2019 if you are in the workplace and trying to move up the ladder.
Well, I want to end, Kate, by asking you, So before I'd actually started reading your commentary on this for the IEA, you know, I would have picked up that Stylist magazine with its glossy pages and its infographics on the gender pay gap, and I probably would have thought, wow, you know, this is quite alarming data. Now imagine if I was a young woman. Imagine I'm picking up this magazine, this free magazine with a circulation of hundreds of thousands, and I'm just entering the workforce or just thinking about entering the workforce. That's going to be pretty demoralizing, isn't it? Is that why you're so passionate about these, what you deem to be misleading statistics? You know, why are you so driven to year in, year out, produce these reports, produce these rebuttals to these, the harvesting of this meaningless data?
I think if you believe women are equal to men, if you believe that you know, we need to create a fair and equal world, then you think that women can add and subtract. They can put out these ridiculous statistics and expect women to take them at face value rather than doing their own calculations, looking at context and figuring out that there's lies, damn lies, and statistics. As I said, there are an infinite number of gender pay gaps that you can calculate. So which are the meaningful ones? We need to whittle that down so we can talk about the real issues that women actually face. Rape, domestic violence, many, many issues that we're still faced with on a daily basis when we walk down the street, that I would prefer the media and government give more attention to than some meaningless statistics. To your point about young women in particular, you know, my heart does break thinking that young girls are being taught that when they come into the workforce, they're just going to face mass discrimination, that they can never rise up. And it's just so far from the case. Women need to be told honest truths about how their choices will impact their earnings and their jobs and their trajectory in the workforce, but that they are empowered and able to make any choice that they want to make that best suits them. You know, that is the message that we need to be telling young girls. That is the reality for them. You know, we are sitting here talking about this podcast in a country where the prime minister is a woman, and you know, there's a lot of opportunity for women out there, and I actually think the real data backs that up.
Thank you, Kate. You can download Kate's latest gender pay gap briefing on the IEA website at iea.org.uk. You can subscribe to this channel on Apple Podcasts too to get more of me and Kate every week. Thank you very much.